typical murderers. Some plan their crimes meticulously, while others kill on impulse.
It's Jason Voorhees.
Fred Krueger, Mother. Fred Krueger!
It is time, Michael.
When there is no more room in hell.
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
The dead.
What's your favorite scary movie?
We'll walk the earth.
I'm eternal, child. I am the eater of them.
No tears, please. It's a waste of good suffering.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
The boogeyman is real.
Here's Johnny.
The blackest eyes.
Every year.
The devil's eyes.
Don't fall asleep.
It's got a death curse.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Death Curse Radio. I'm your host, Nathan Barker, and joining me tonight is Kent Mullins.
What's up, guys?
Now for tonight's episode, a community spotlight. The first, actually, the first of many more to come, to highlight and help promote various artists, prop makers, mask makers, etc., etc. And I would like to welcome a personal friend of mine, Brandon Murphy, a.k.a. Brandon Scott Murphy, from Sculpt or Die, a super talented artist providing hoods and other masks and such. And actually, you can find him in person coming up at Horror Hound Mask Fest Indianapolis coming up this August 24th through the 26th, which actually Kent and I will be at again this year, and we'll be able to hang out with you again this year, brother. But thanks for joining us, Brandon, and how the hell are you during this super busy crunch time before one of the biggest shows of the year?
Well, hey guys, I'm happy to be here. It's always a pleasure to talk to you guys. I'm kind of just, you know, you chain yourself to a barrel of latex and staple your eyelids open and hope for the best.
I mean, really, there's probably no perfect amount of preparation time. You basically got to prepare for this shit like as soon as last year is over. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, you really do. You have to kind of keep the cogs and the gears turning mentally, because it will get away from you, and even then it's still going to get away from you. It's like being a kid and reaching up trying to catch a balloon, you know, like you can't quite get it, but you want to keep your eye on it and keep, you know, it always gets away, and it always comes down to the wire. And I don't know any artist that goes to this show who is a month out and says, okay, I'm done. You know.
Yeah. Now before we got to recording, I just, little funny tidbit that you said is you'll not actually be prepared before you get there. You'll actually be in your room like herring masks and shit. I thought that was just funny as all hell.
Yeah. No, that's usually what it comes down to. If you know, there are a couple of pieces that I do that are relatively simple to produce. It's simple in the sense that, you know, I cast them up, trim them, paint them, and they're done. And then there are some other ones that have a lot of hair work. Some of them have custom made, you know, glass eyes. Some of them have custom made acrylic teeth. Some of them have, you know, earrings and ponytail holders and little extra pieces that you can't cast with the actual piece. You have to do them separately in a separate mold, otherwise you wouldn't be able to get a proper casting, you know, and all that stuff has to be added on after the fact. So stuff like that, I get as much done before I can, before I have to leave. And it's not uncommon to get there on Thursday, load your stuff out, and then just head up to the room and do that last 10%. You know, before the show opens on Friday. It's totally not uncommon at all.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Kent. You can go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask, if you're like me, I was wondering if you're a procrastinator of any kind, because if I know I've got a show coming up 6 months in advance, I don't start doing any work until about 3 weeks out.
Well, I would say that I am to a certain extent, but it's only because I can't keep myself locked down on one specific thing. I'm the type of person creatively where I have to move from one thing directly into something else every single time. I do a piece, I finish a piece, and I immediately start on something else. And as such, it is hard for me to say, okay, I need to dedicate X amount of days or weeks or however long to preparing for a show, because my brain is not able to keep up. My hands can't keep up with my brain. You know what I mean? Like, my brain's going so fast in so many different directions that I really just kind of have to put blinders on and focus, you know?
Absolutely. Especially when you have like five different castings and hair and paint, and there's stuff in the mold and there's stuff out of the mold, and how much latex do I have? And
absolutely.
So much going on.
Absolutely.
Now, okay. Speaking of molds. Okay. So many people probably would recognize Brandon's work mostly in the Friday the 13th category, big Friday the 13th fan, as Kent and I are too. And Brandon has done several part six, part seven, great work on both of those. And recently has released what he's deemed as the Rotten Apple for his part eight hood. And I've seen plenty of pictures of the full face version. Once again, another great job as usual. I really liked your version of that. And just tell us a little bit about how all that came together.
Okay. Well, first off, I appreciate the kind words. I never want to be a guy who takes that kind of stuff for granted, because in my opinion, an artist is only as good as their last piece. But it was kind of, you know, you know this. I love Jason. I love Friday the 13th in any iteration. However, when it comes to the Friday the 13th collectors community or the costuming community, there's only so much that you can do that hasn't already been perfected. And when I say perfected, what I mean is, if you take James Mangrum's Unlucky Day bust, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's a Friday the 13th part four, the final chapter bust, that was limited to 13 copies, and it is insane. It is one of the most highly sought after Friday the 13th collectibles ever in history. And as such, they are very rare, and when they do show up, they fetch thousands of dollars. But it's because it's that good. So when I look at Jason and I look at the character and I look at what I do and my skill level and stuff like that, there's no reason for me to do a part four, because I don't think that I can do any better than James did with his Unlucky Day, because it's just too good. You know, it's too good. I try to find something that I think I can add my own, you know, flavor to and make it fresh and fun for me and fun for the people who like to see them also. And so, of course, part eight was one of those, but it was kind of it kind of snuck up on me. I didn't expect to want to do a part eight. If you talk to any Friday the 13th fan, part eight, Jason Takes Manhattan, is one of the most heavily despised horror movie sequels ever, specifically because of the look of Jason, particularly with his mask off. I'm of the mindset that I can take a bad design, or what appears to be a bad design on camera, and take 90% of that, 95% of that, and then take that last little 5 or 10% for myself and just kind of crank it up as best I can and get something that, you know, satisfies myself as a creative and also satisfies the community. And that's kind of what happened with part eight. I didn't expect to do a part eight. My buddy James Power, who operates a hockey mask company called Crystal Lake Industries, they're based in Canada. He kind of put the idea in my head because he owns a mold that is taken from one of the hero hockey masks for Jason Takes Manhattan, and he always kind of, you know, typically whenever artists make latex masks, it's always tough, specifically with Jason, to figure out what hockey mask fits what latex mask best and stuff like that to have a good look, because when a lot of these really groundbreaking sculpts were coming out in the first, you know, in the early 2000s, right at the birth of the internet, all these legendary, like now what are considered to be legendary Jason sculptures were being put out. But a lot of the dudes that did it didn't have access to the molds or the blanks that we as a community have access to now when it comes to hockey masks. That stuff just wasn't around back then, you know. Now you can find, you can find movie molds here, movie molds there, you know what I mean? All that stuff got sought out and found after the fact. So James kind of always wanted to see somebody do a Part 8 undermask that properly fit his hero mold Part 8 mask. And I was, of course, happy to oblige, you know. So he kind of put the idea in my head, and that was when I started really heavily studying the design of the face. And I'm of the mindset that after looking at it close, both in film and in some behind-the-scenes material and some promotional material, I don't really feel like the design was as bad as it looks on that on screen. Because if you look at the cowl when he's walking around wearing the hockey mask, that thing is stellar. There is some crazy good sculpting going on in that, you know, on the cowl. There's a lot of detail there that I never noticed until I actually got Blu-ray screen caps of the cowl from all these different angles. And I'm like, this thing is fucking cool. So one of the properties of foam latex, which is what the cowl and the appliances that were on Kane's face for that movie were made of, is it's like a sponge. When you get it wet, it balloons. It just soaks up moisture and puffs up, swells up. And there's this one promotional shot that I want to say it was put out in a German press kit. And it's of Kane in the full makeup, but he's just standing there. It's not during a scene or anything. He's just standing there in the sewer waiting. It's a black and white photo. And there's nothing on his face. Like, it's not wet. It's not slimy. And you can see it's not a great design, but it's way better than it looked on screen. And my hypothesis is they kept rubbing and slathering all this foamy, wet slime on his face, and it just puffed up that foam latex appliance and blew out all the detail, you know. Again, that's just my kind of Friday the 13th Part 8 conspiracy theory about the makeup. But it made a lot of sense when you compare the cowl at the end of the movie to the cowl that he wears during the rest of the film, because they're the same sculpture. You can tell there are the same characteristics in both sculptures, but the one in the end scene is so less detailed, or it looks to be less detailed. And my only conclusion can be because it swelled up from absorbing all the moisture from the water and the slime and everything else. So I was like, what would it look like in my head? I was like, what would it look like if the face was as detailed as the cowl was in the whole movie minus the end? And so that's what I tried to do. I tried to, like, take the accurate shapes of the face, the lines, the eye, the teeth, even the little, you know, a lot of people call it the jack-o'-lantern lips, you know, and just make it pop and carry all the detail that's present in the whole head around into the face. And that was really my goal, was to take a Part 8 and just not make it look so flat, but still make it look accurate.
What's your sculpt reminded me of? Have you ever edited a picture, and you know how you have the little scroller where you can adjust the definition, the high def, and you can scroll it to the right, and it kind of makes it slowly brings the details more obvious? That's what your sculpture of that Part 8 reminds me of. It's like you took a screenshot, and then you somehow turned it 3D, and then adjusted the definition of it. That's that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a good analogy. And I think the same can be said for a lot of my pieces. I tend to go crazy when it comes to the detail. Sometimes it is for the better and sometimes it's not. But I feel like that was one of the pieces that definitely, at least in my opinion, it benefited from it. And especially with how well it took paint, I was very surprised. That's another thing about the Part 8 cowl. In the movie, minus the end scene, that thing is so many crazy, cool, different colors, man. You just have to pause the Blu-ray and look at it. There's like green slime coming out of the wounds, and there's like algae growing up all over his skull and stuff. I mean, it's really cool.
Yeah, and even the base color is hard to establish. I've painted several Part 8s myself, and it's always, depending on what part of the movie you're looking at it from, it can be 5-6 different colors. It's really hard to pin down.
It absolutely is. The most consistent color that I found, and this might be a little bit too technical for just a casual listener, but I'm trying to, my brain's just firing on all cylinders right now. The best combination that I came up with, and something that was a little bit more consistent, is I picked the city shots. Times Square, the alleyway, the diner, the subway, all those shots. Because those are the best lit shots of him in the whole movie. And if you're familiar with how they made Friday the 13th Part 8, they filmed the city shots over the span of just a few days. Accumulatively, they filmed a couple of days in New York, and then they filmed a couple of days in Toronto. And that was all the money that they could afford to spend on actual on-location shooting. And as such, it's really consistent. In those scenes, the color is very consistent because they were all shot almost in sequence in the same couple of days, you know? So, I was surprised by how much research I actually had to do in order to both sculpt it and paint it, because I just didn't anticipate it. Like I said, I was of the mindset before I did it, like, oh, it's just a simple, it's Part 8, Part 8's simple. And it's like, actually, it's not. There's a lot going on there that seems to have gotten overshadowed over the years by just a distaste for the actual film, you know? So I was impressed. I mean, it definitely gave me a new appreciation for that design. I've always been a fan of the black-on-black costume with the yellow hockey. I've always thought that was a cool look. It didn't make any sense in terms of continuity, but it still looked cool. But it definitely gave me a much more appreciative mindset when it comes to the actual makeup and the sculptures and everything else. I wish there was actual photographs behind the scenes in the shop while they were making this stuff. Apart from, you know, like some of the set and prop work, but there wasn't really any documentation on the actual makeup appliances, you know. But I was impressed, to say the least. I did not expect, of all the Jasons out there to do and to then that I have done, and I'm sure Ken, you can vouch for this too. It's the one that I least expected to have to put so much legwork into, but it was definitely by far the one that took the most.
Absolutely. That's also a 360-degree sculpture. It's got a lot going on. It's got almost just as much going on the back of the head as it does the front.
Yes, yes. And that was another thing. Again, you don't see that very well in the end sequence. You don't see the gashes in the head and the back of the head and all this crazy cool stuff. But it's definitely there when you look at the cowl over the course of the rest of the film up until that point. There's a lot of real fine detailing and, you know, wrinkling and like puffy waterlogged skin, you know, kind of hanging off and these big sloughs coming off of his. I mean, it's just, there's a lot going on. And that, again, like I said, that I was just really impressed because I never paid that much attention to it until I started sculpting it. And then I was like, holy cow, this thing's actually really cool. And it's a shame that it got overshadowed by how terrible the movie is perceived to be. You know.
Well, it's always been one of my favorite looks, at least looks, for Jason out of the entire franchise. Yeah. And you absolutely murdered it, man. You killed it.
Well, thanks, man. I really appreciate that. You know, that's, you know, stuff like that isn't up for me to decide. That's kind of why I put this stuff out there. You know, it's not up for me to say, oh, I did this and it's the best one that's ever, you know, that's not why I do what I do, but I definitely appreciate it when somebody says, hey, good job. So thank you. I appreciate that.
You deserve.
I definitely agree. Absolutely.
You deserve all the praise you get, man.
Yeah, definitely. And Brandon, you and I, we have regular communication, but we haven't chatted much over the last couple months or whatnot, probably during the time that you're sculpting this. But when I saw the finished product, I was like, And, you know, normally I would have had a little bit of insight on it, but now, like, you explaining your hypothesis and the way you came about with the finished product, it's awesome to hear that you actually did that much research and that much checking into things and then making a determination of why you think it looks the way that it did, which after you explaining that makes total sense to me. And I'm not a mask maker, so I was unaware of a couple of those things, but now after you've explained it, it's like, oh, okay, that does make a lot of sense. And I like the way that you took it back to prior to, I guess, more of the beginning or middle stages. And I think that was a great angle to take with that particular version, since, like you said, most people, when they think about it, they think of the way that it does look at the end. They're kind of like, and it does get a lot of hate and a lot of bashing, and for obvious reasons. But I like how you kept it with your hypothesis. It's just very interesting to hear.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I try to do for everything I do. I whenever you're basing something off of a design from a film, which is a lot of the stuff that I've done, there's only so much you can really do because it's not like there was one person who sculpted it, molded it, painted it, applied it, the whole nine. It's a whole team of people. You have 12, 14, sometimes a couple dozen people working on one character for one film. And as such, you're going to have different people apply the makeup on different days. And so over the course of the film, you're going to have a different color here, like Ken was saying, a different color here, a different shape here, et cetera, et cetera. And something that I try to do is I try to find one specific shot or one specific scene. And that's what I try to match to the best of my ability. You know, that's what I try to go for.
Yeah, and like I said, thank
you.
Yeah, and I've seen good buzz on social media with it. I think most of the Die Hard Friday fans, I think that they are receptive to your version. I've seen nothing but positive things. If there was a hater out there, which there probably has been a couple, then so be it. But for the most part, I think everybody's enjoyed your take on it. And it's nice to see that, because I'll be honest, as far as the Part 8 hoods go, there's not very many good versions out there. Most of them, there's a couple that I've seen that were like, that one's not too bad. But, Kyle Huculuk, his silicone was, he did a nice job on that, I thought. And now as far as latex goes, I think yours is definitely right up there setting the par with who's going to step up and try to challenge that.
Sure. Well, I appreciate that. It's very kind of you to say.
And speaking of Jason, obviously you being the big Friday fan, and just for the listeners out there that might not know a little bit of Brandon's background, Brandon actually is a Tom Savini, graduate of Tom Savini School, on top of that, to go along with his passion for Friday. But some of you might have also seen his name attached to a very popular fan film from another good friend of ours, Vincent DeSanti, Womp Stomp Films, Never Hike Alone. And Brandon's been attached to that project with the Ghost Hawks. And there's been a lot of posts on social media about that. And Brandon's the artist behind that, from the blanks pulled right off of the screen used. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that too, since that's basically in the moment, I guess.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. There were three hockey masks, ghost hockey masks used in the film. Never Hike Alone. At least there were, okay, I'm trying to not give you the wrong information here. Vince and I have talked about it many times. I know there were at least two, but he had three made. I don't know if all three were used for the film, but two of them were. But I know that he had three that were made, and I have the main one actually here in my hands right now as we speak. And it's, it's a fantastic design. I don't know if Vince may have been on the show before or Return to Camp Blood before, and he may have talked about this, but there were so many little conscious decisions that both he and the artist that created the hockey masks for the film, which is Composite Effects Studios, Composite Effects, out in California. There were a lot of little conscious decisions that they made to really kind of have it be familiar, but also set it apart. Like, the, for example, the vent holes on the front of the mask, particularly near the bottom, are, you know, they're not that typical crescent shape that we see on all other Jason masks. It's a very angular, almost like a V. And that is to mirror the layout of the camp that they shot in, which is just kind of a crazy, cool, almost subliminal type thing, you know, kind of Kubrickian in a way. Just kind of give it a little bit of an unnerving look. But yeah, so for those of you who don't know, I got in touch with Vince. Vince and I met very organically online, close to, I mean, probably it had to have been 2 years ago now. And we just kind of became friends. And when it came time for him to do his, he wanted to do a physical release campaign for Never Hike Alone because of how well received it was. And one of the perks that he wanted to do was the actual, you know, the hockey mask. And he asked me if I could do reproductions. And before I was known for my latex work, I used to pretty much work almost exclusively in resins and fiberglass and stuff like that. And so, of course, I have years of experience in that as well. And so, you know, we got in touch with Composite Effects, and he was totally cool with it. He was like, yeah, I'll send you the mold, no problem. You know, so he sent me the mold. I got it a couple of days later, and we've been, you know, putting them out, you know. I'm working on the rewards for the backers that backed the physical release campaign now, who actually got a hockey mask, which, if I might say, sold out within the first 2 hours, which is absurd. For me to, I mean, it's absurd to me anyway. That campaign did really well.
Yeah, it did.
I don't think anyone was kind of prepared for how much of a response that that fan film got. It was almost like lightning in a bottle. It was crazy. I mean, I knew it was good just from talking to Vince and knowing what I knew about the film before he released it and stuff, just what little I knew. It's not like I had all this insider info or anything, just what little he would talk to me about it. It just, I knew it was going to be good, but it was just like, holy cow, that thing took off. And I couldn't be happier for him. Couldn't be happier for him. That guy has the future of the franchise in his heart. And I wish somebody who had the means would give him a shot, because he gets it. He understands what the franchise needs, and he understands, more importantly, how to give it to him, you know. But anyway, back to the topic at hand, which was the ghost hawks.
Basically, just to clarify, so nobody's misunderstood here, is some of the pictures and all that good stuff on social media, like you said, are going out to the backers. And then, of course, there's going to be masks available to the general public after those are complete.
Yes. I should probably talk a little bit about that. I honestly get messages almost every day about them, which is fine. I'm not complaining about that. It's just getting to the point to where a lot of times, especially right now in the heat of production on many different things, it's hard for me to get back to everybody individually in a timely manner. So, but yes, the backers is priority numero uno when it comes to the ghost hawks. They are going out first. That is, I'm not even thinking about producing any or taking orders on any until those are done, in which they are very close to being done. The shipping window is almost upon us, you know, so those will be shipped out to Vince, and then he will, because they were part of a package, he's going, you know, he will be packaging all the rewards individually and distributing them from there. But they're a blast to do. They're really fun. The paintwork is very fun. It was cool to do something a little bit different, you know. It's wild because I have close to 50 just kind of laying around, you know, just in various stages of completion. They go in waves, you know. So there's 15 over here that are base coated, and then there's 10 over here that are base coated with all the paint chips already taken off, and then there's other ones over here who are getting the metal work put on. You know, they work in batches, so to make it more manageable. But it's very cool, and they are coming directly from the mold used for the film. I mean, it's identical. It's a silicone mold that was based off of a clay sculpture made by Composite Effects. So it's identical in shape. It's identical in material. It's the same material that was used in the film, which is a very high impact resistant urethane plastic. It's the same stuff they use to make injection molded hard hats.
Plus, you also have the screen used mask to base the painting off of. So you literally cannot get a more accurate replica.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I seen you made a recent post on social media just trying to kind of clarify that you had received a bunch of messages and all that good stuff. So I just thought I'd give you a chance to just kind of explain that.
Oh, for sure. And I absolutely appreciate that. And like I said, it's not like I definitely don't mind the interest. I definitely don't mind people messaging me. It's just, you know, if I was to sit down and answer every single message I got about it, as soon as I got it, I wouldn't get anything done.
Right. Ken, did you have anything for him on the Never Hike Alone stuff?
This is more just a question about the design of the Never Hike Alone, Jason. I haven't watched it in a while. I watched it when it first came out. Did they have a design for the face, for what's underneath the mask on that film?
Yes. Kelsey. Oh, forgive me. What is her last name? Kelsey Bear? Kelsey Barr? There was a professional effects artist out in Los Angeles, or the California area. I'm not exactly sure where in California she's based out of. But they used a composite effects silicone hood that was custom painted and kind of weathered specifically to Vince's specifications. And then the hockey mask was then sculpted to fit that specifically as it fit on Vince to give it all a very unique fluid look so that everything looked right and just kind of perfectly designed. But there was a face underneath, and there is a reveal in the film where he gets his hockey mask knocked off and you get a quick glimpse for the face. And it is, it's very cool. You know, it's very quick, but it's very cool. And, you know, I really, I actually, you know what, I probably shouldn't say anything else.
like I said, I watched it and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I think it was better than most of the movies in the franchise, but I couldn't remember if they did a reveal. I was looking at an image there on Google and it looks kind of like a mixture between a 6 and a 7, but I wasn't sure if that was actually from the set or if that was a fan thing. No,
that was actually from the film. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. To hear Vince talk about it, and I can't, of course, speak for him, but it was very much, like you said, 6, 7-ish, and maybe a little bit of part 4 in there.
I honestly think it looks better than all of those, to be perfectly honest.
Well, we'll have Vince on again here soon, and you can ask him all the questions you want. How about that?
Yeah. He would be able to tell you much more, probably much more eloquently than I would be able to.
Yeah, we'll definitely have him on soon, and you can fire away. So he'll enjoy that. But yeah, I mean, Ghost Hawks, Rotten Apples. Obviously, the Ghost Hawks are kind of in a, I don't want to say a limbo period, but obviously the backers are priority. So with that being said.
And like I said, their window is coming up and they will be available again for the general public to order. It's not like it's a one and done and they're gone forever. They will be available again within the next couple months. So it will happen.
Gotcha. So obviously those will not be for sale at Maskfest, and I loved the Jason Goes to Hell piece that you had last year at Maskfest. And so with that coming up, and like I said, one of the biggest shows of the year, what can people expect to see on your table there?
Oh, well, a lot of different things. If you don't mind, I'm going to talk a little bit about Maskfest, and then kind of go into what pieces I'll have, because it's kind of, I'm bringing stuff according to the show, which is pretty cool. But
yeah, absolutely. 10th anniversary, feel free to give them any
it's,
promo that you'd like to.
Absolutely. Well, for anybody who doesn't know, Maskfest is a convention all its own that is specifically geared towards monsters and special effects makeup and sculptures and latex masks and everything else under the sun, and props and costumes and everything else. And it's a fantastic show. It just so happens to be held in conjunction with Horror Hound Weekend in Indianapolis every year. And the cool thing about both of those shows is if you go to Horror Hound Indy or you go to Maskfest, you get into the other show for free. So, you know, you buy one ticket, get into both shows. And so that's cool. In addition to that, Maskfest/Horror Hound is also being held at a brand new location this year. They're actually moved locations from the Indianapolis East to downtown Indianapolis at the JW Marriott. They have a huge space for the vendor and the show floors on both sides of the convention. It's definitely the largest that either one of these shows has ever been, and larger by a pretty substantial capacity. You know, you're talking at least double the vendors, double the celebrities, double the monsters, double the makeup, double the madness. It's going to be awesome. Now, as such, because it's become, it's a very large show this year. It's the 10th anniversary, and there are a lot of really amazing celebrities attached. And I just so happen to have made pieces before that are based on characters or films where these celebrities have appeared. And that, of course, is dictating what I bring. One of them is a Army of Darkness Evil Ash bust, which is the dual character that Bruce Campbell plays in Army of Darkness, the big bad guy. Is one of the first pieces I ever did, probably close to 4 years ago now. And it just kind of fell to the wayside. Not necessarily that it wasn't popular. It was, and I sold a couple here and there, but it wasn't really one of those things that I just kind of did it because I wanted to do it. I didn't really do it because I wanted to capitalize on it, you know? But I'm bringing him back, and this is the first show in the, you know, I mean, this is 2 or 3 years now that I haven't brought him. And so I'm bringing Evil Ash back. And he has, I mean, he's a full character bust. He comes with the helmet, which is removable, hand-laid hair work. I even got custom screen-matched eyes that were used, that were made using the actual original contact lenses Bruce Campbell wore in the movie. So they're 100% screen accurate. You know, it's not going to get any better than that. And so I'm excited about that. I'm bringing a couple of those because Bruce Campbell's going to be at Horror Hound this year, which is very big for Horror Hound. And it's the first year in the past 5 that I've been going to this show where he's showed up. So that's a thrill. And so I was like, oh, I'll bring a couple of Evil Ashes. You know, that'll be neat. I'm also bringing a Brundle Fly, which is a fully, you know, it's a full character bust based around David Cronenberg's 1986 film The Fly, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's my favorite director of all time. And it's part of a commission project that I got where a group of collectors banded together. And it's a very smart way of doing things. They banded together. And instead of picking an artist and paying them a couple thousand dollars for, you know, to sculpt and produce a piece, they split the cost amongst themselves, and so they each paid a much smaller fraction of the total price in exchange for getting a finished product, you know, which is a very smart way of getting something really cool that nobody else does that you can just get, you know. So they wanted me to do a fully transformed, you know, Brundle Fly from the end of the movie, and I'm absolutely thrilled about that. And there were a total of 9 collectors in this group, and I took the job on it with one stipulation, that I'd be able to make a 10th one just for Mass Fest, and that be it. So those 9 have come and gone, and the one at Mass Fest is it. And after that, you won't be able to get another one. It's the last one. So that'll be there, which is kind of cool. I will have some Jason stuff. I will have some Tales from the Crypt Demon Knight display heads that I sculpted based around the demons in the movie Tales from the Crypt Demon Knight, which I did a couple of months back, and it's a very fun piece, very cool. I do, you know, light up glowing eyes and stuff, and you know, acrylic teeth, and there's a resin ponytail holder that, you know, is very ornate. I make little earrings for them to wear. They're very ornate. And it's just a really cool piece. But Billy Zane, who plays the main bad guy in Tales from the Crypt Demon Knight, is going to be at Horror Hound this year too. And that's, it was totally just a coincidence for me. So I'm, you know, I'm bringing a couple of those. And Nate, you're familiar with this one. I'm sure you are too, Kent. I will have a couple of Zaxxons with me, which Zaxxon tends to be a pretty popular mask. I haven't produced one in quite a few months. I kind of put him on the back burner to move on to other stuff, but I'm bringing him back for the show, which Zaxxon is my take on the mask that Tommy Jarvis wears in Friday the 13th Part 4 when he's playing Commodore 64. So that's neat. And I'm also doing a couple of kind of like little one-off show exclusives that are kind of, you know, fabricated masks, which is kind of getting back into the old world way of doing masks. You know, back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, Halloween masks were just plastic. If you wanted a latex mask, liquid latex, you couldn't just go out and buy rubber like you can now. You know, so a lot of professional artists for film and theater and et cetera would fabricate masks using makeup latex and cotton and paper towels and everything else. And they would come up with some amazing stuff. As a matter of fact, Frankenstein, the original Frankenstein from the 30s, was made of cotton and latex. You know, the original Frankenstein makeup appliance, which is crazy to think that that wasn't sculpted and molded somewhere. It was just made out of cotton and latex, you know. But I am kind of experimenting with new things, and that's one of the things that I did this year is take a couple of masks that I'm just kind of fabricating and making cool little corpse characters and skulls and, you know, kind of hooded horrors and stuff like that. Just kind of experimenting and getting fresh takes on old things and, you know, some, I don't know, just some kind of creativity, you know. And there will be
t-shirts.
And some, yes. There will be merchandise available, stickers, T-shirts. I'm also bringing baseball hats this year. I had a lot of requests for baseball hats last year, and I have them made, and so they will be there, and it's pretty cool. And I also have a couple of other surprises up my sleeve on some quite larger things that will be at the show that you just kind of have to be there and see, you know. I don't want to give anything away, but it's going to be a good time. It's going to be a fun time. It's literally the largest collection of artists that do this type of stuff in the world all in one spot at the same time. It's absolutely surreal. Absolutely. So if you're a horror fan, if you're a monster fan, there is no other place to be other than Mass Fest. And that's Indianapolis downtown at the JW Marriott, August 24th and the 26th.
And from what you mentioned in previous talks, you're going to be solo at the booth this year. So anybody that's listening, pop by, help keep Brandon company, check out some monsters. He's going to have a lot of good shit on the table, and he always likes to talk monsters. So if you have any questions or anything about what we've talked about, I guarantee he'll be available to answer whatever you want to know.
Absolutely. Nate can attest to this. If I'm left to my own devices and somebody else is watching my booth, it's a show full of monsters. I can't not walk around. So I'm hardly ever there. But this year I'm flying solo at the booth, so I will be there the whole time so that you can come and talk my ear off, please. I love to talk about this stuff. It's all I do every day, all day, is work with and make monsters for forever. That's all I do.
Hell yeah.
So please talk to me about it.
I'll definitely be popping by, definitely a few times. I know Kent said that he's going to be busy working, but either way, maybe we'll pop by. And
you know what? For some Friday knowledge here, Nate, you probably already heard about this. Vince is going to be there. Vince DeSanti is going to be there. And so I'm sure he'll be hanging around quite a bit too. Adam Marcus, the director of Jason Goes to Hell, is going to be there. This is one of Adam's very rare convention appearances.
Yes,
you know, he's a very busy man, and he works all the time, and so he doesn't get a chance to make it out to a lot of these things. But it's actually, this is the, do you believe that this is the 25th anniversary of Jason Goes to Hell on August the 13th? Do you believe that?
Yes, I do. We were just talking about that on Return to Camp Blood earlier this evening.
Oh, fantastic. Well, there you go. So,
yeah. Along with the 15th anniversary, the same day of Freddy versus Jason. So for the Robert Englund fans, they can get out to Mask Fest and get their Freddy versus merch if they want to wait in line all day to get it signed. That'd be the perfect time.
Absolutely. And then, you know, Adam's going to be there, and he's actually doing a showing Friday night of Jason Goes to Hell, the unrated director's cut on the screen. It's that version of that film has never been played in a theater. Ever.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, so that's fantastic. And he and Kane are going to be on hand to introduce and answer questions and everything else during the showing. And it's in an IMAX theater, man. I mean, it's going to be amazing, you know. So don't
and
miss
to
it.
Add
it's
to that,
going to be one of the coolest shows.
Absolutely. And to add to that, for the Jason Goes to Hell fans out there, one of the producers, of John Lepper from the upcoming Jason Goes to Hell documentary, is also going to be on hand. And he's going to be doing, I believe, some fan interviews. So he's going to be picking out people to be featured probably in the documentary, I'm assuming, or why would he bother? So if there's any mega Jason Goes to Hell fans out there and you want to get in on that, then be sure to stop by and say hey to him. And you just might be one that gets to be on screen for some of the fan stuff. I know he's looking to talk to all the Jason Goes to Hell fans that want to chit chat, and definitely hit him up if you see him. I don't know if he'll have some flyers or some kind of paperwork or anything to freebies to pass out as far as the documentary goes, but I'm sure he'll have something. So either way, definitely check that out. Adam Marcus, for him to appear, that's pretty big. I know I'm taking my original Jason Goes to Hell poster so I can get him to sign that. I'm pretty stoked that he's going to be there. And of course, obviously Kane too. But yeah, lots of good things going on that weekend. And definitely swing by Brandon's table. I know I'm going to pop by a few times. Maybe we'll do a Facebook Live, you and I. Maybe we'll do that if there's some slow time and we're just kind of there hanging out. But I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that Rotten Apple in person. Kent, do you have anything for him before we close this out?
Well, I'm going to probably be busy helping Aaron with, you know, photo ops and all that behind the scenes shit. But I'll definitely stop by and see you, man, at your booth. And maybe me and Nathan can do a Death Curse Live thing there with you. But I'm just so excited to spend the weekend with people like me. And it's my favorite show of the year, Mask Fest. So we had a good little talk last year, and I'm excited to see you again. And you're right now one of my favorite artists in the community, man. And everything you do and really inspires me personally. So we're really happy to have you.
Oh, man. Well, I'm just happy to be here. You know, the truth of the fact is, without a community support system behind any artist, it doesn't work. It will not sustain itself. And so, you know, I wouldn't be doing what I do, and more importantly, I wouldn't be able to do what I do on a regular basis that I am able to do so at this moment if it were not for a community that was able to give me those opportunities. So I appreciate that.
And fun little story about last year, because I do remember Brandon and I, we were standing outside, I think, having a beer or something. And you were like, hey, you know, Kent Mullins, he's here. And I'm like, yeah, I know him. You want me to introduce you to him right now? And we literally walked, what, like 100 feet across the sidewalk from the main entrance. And I'm like, Kent, Brandon Scott Murphy. And it was like, oh, you know, and then we just stood there and had drinks for the rest of the evening. So
yeah, I was like 27 coronas in, not the ideal situation to meet somebody.
Right, right. I come off over with Brandon, and I holler at you, and you had a backpack full of beers, if I recall, and you're like, hey, you guys want beers? And we're like, fuck yeah, we want beers.
I'm from Kentucky, man. I've always got a backpack full of beers.
Right, right. That's funny. You had a backpack full of beers at Horror Hound Columbus, too, yeah. But no, I can attest that he does have a backpack full of beers. So if you happen to see Kent around and you need a beer, just look for the backpack. But yeah, that's a true story about last year. Literally, Brandon was like, hey, you know Kent Mullins? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, he's here. And I'm like, I actually didn't know that you were even there because I hadn't talked to you. And I'm like, what? I remember being like, what the fuck? He's here? And he's like, yeah. And then we go walk. I'm like, well, I'll introduce you to him. We'll go find him. And then sure enough, literally, I think you had just gotten there. And we're walking on the sidewalk.
Yeah, like, I don't think he had even made it inside the building yet. Like, he was in the process of walking up.
Yeah, I don't think
that makes me saying I was 27 in so much worse. Than...
yeah, because we were by that back side entrance from the main area underneath the overhang or whatever. And I remember being like, oh well, fuck, there he is right there. So I hollered at you, and yeah, you still I think had all your shit there. I don't think you'd even made it in the door, and I don't think you made it in the door for a while because well, we had a backpack full of beers. So
it was a good time.
it was on from there. So hopefully you'll have the backpack at some point when we see it, because we're definitely going to have to probably have some more beers again this year, I would assume. So I'm definitely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I keep a cooler under the table. So
well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
what kind of beer you drink, Brandon? I'll have one in there especially for you.
Yingling, man.
I've got you.
There we go.
I appreciate it.
All right, Brandon. Well, I definitely appreciate your time and appreciate your work.
Yeah.
And just throw out there for the listeners where they can contact you or where they can place an order at, whether that be on Facebook, websites. Just go ahead and let people know how they can contact you if they're interested in your work.
Sure. Well, my motto is sculpt or die, because if I wasn't sculpting, I would be dying. So, because literally it's what I do for a living. So pretty much if you type in the words sculpt or die into any search engine anywhere on the planet, you will find me, be it Facebook, Instagram, Google, the search bar in your browser, the URL bar, any of that stuff. You will find me. So
there you go. Google sculpt or die. You'll find Brandon Scott Murphy. Check him out at Mask Fest coming up August 24th through the 26th. Like I said, appreciate your time, appreciate your work, and glad to have you tonight, my friend.
Absolutely. The pleasure is all mine. I sincerely appreciate it.
And definitely look forward to seeing you here in about a month. But that wraps up another episode of Death Curse Radio. So please rate and review wherever the hell you listen to the show at. Check us out on Facebook at Death Curse Radio. Check out back episodes on our website, deathcurseradio.com. This episode was brought to you by Sculpt or Die. Until next time.
Evil lurks in the mind of a bad man.
This is friend.
Your suffering will be legendary even in hell. What the fuck, time, bitch?
I am the devil, and I am here to do the devil's work.
Candyman.
Eternal.
Because I've seen enough horror movies to know any weirdo wearing a mask is never friendly.
That is better.
I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare, huh?
Some folks have a strange idea entertainment.